Everybody, and welcome. It's 11 p.m. It's Wednesday, September 16th, 2020, and thanks for joining us for the 93rd episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thanks for that, and if you don't mind, please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Sure. Well, that was sort of an oldie. Actually, it was a very oldie. So that was Love Hurts, and made famous by a lot of people, but more recently, Nazareth back in the day, which was kind of a follow-up to their huge hit, Hair of the Dog, off the same record with the same title. And I thought, since we're talking about recovering from toxic relationships, this would be kind of a nice theme about what it's like to be in a toxic relationship.
That's very true. Good choice. So thank you very much for that. Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled I'll Stand By You, Healthy Relationships After Toxic Ones, which we're going to discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
Okay, so I've been sort of doing kind of original tributes and shout-outs. So tonight I thought I would talk about a different group of musical folks. And in particular tonight I'm going to be talking about engineers and producers. And in particular, we're going to start out and talk about Eddie Kramer. So for those of you who don't know, formerly known as Edward Kramer, originally from, as I like to refer to these folks, from Zavadiga. Eddie Kramer, for those of you who don't know, is a very, very famous engineer and producer who has done everyone from David Bowie to Eric Clapton to Hendrix to Kiss to the Kinks to Beatles to the Stones. Zeppelin, Mellencamp, Santana, John Mayall, Dionne Warwick, The Small Faces, John Sebastian, Mott the Hoople. The list is pretty much endless. And I'm going to shout out some of the engineering and production credits when I get done with this, but I wanted to give kind of a quick and dirty overview, historically speaking. So originally, Kramer's family was from South Africa, Cape Town to be exact, and his dad and mom were both artists and musician types who were very much anti-apartheid. So they eventually relocated from South Africa to London, which is how Kramer got involved with recording and engineering. So he started out studying piano. I think he was 4 years old at the South African College of Music, and really was into jazz and rock a lot. His secondary instruments were violin and cello, but predominantly a keyboardist. And so once his family relocated, he relocated, I think he was 19 or 20 at the time, and got his first big job at Edvision Studios, which a year later he then got hired by Pi Studios, which recorded people like the Kinks and the Undertakers and the Searchers and even Petula Clark and Sammy Davis Jr. So in 64, he founded his own KPS Studios, which eventually got acquired by Regent Sound, I think, in 65. And that's where the Rolling Stones recorded their first record. And Beatles had also recorded a record, a partial, a four-track there, and Fixing a Hole, which, as most of you know, is on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band record. And Kramer went on to engineer two other singles that actually appeared off Magical Mystery Tour, which was All You Need Is Love and Baby, You're a Rich Man. And those were actually recorded at Olympic Studios, where he also engineered Hendrix and Small Faces, Rolling Stones, and Traffic. And eventually, Kramer became kind of a permanent part of Jimi Hendrix's creative, like, entourage, and actually did four records with Hendrix. But of course, by this time, he had relocated to New York City, where he started out at the Record Plant, and then eventually got into Electric Ladyland, which was where he got hired by John Storick, who's the guy that created and designed Hendrix's Electric Ladyland studio. But anyways, prior to going there, Kramer produced the first Johnny Winter record, and a sequence of Zeppelin albums. He also was around to engineer the original Woodstock Festival of 1969. He's done work with Carly Simon, just all kinds of folks. He went on to record Humble Pie's famous performance Rock in the Fillmore, which was a big, big record for them, which is one of the last records that Peter Frampton recorded on when he was with Humble Pie. I don't know if most people know that. That's where most of his rock roots were done with Humble Pie before he broke off to do a solo recording. But he's done a shoot ton of records. He went on to produce basically a huge four-song demo with Kiss, which got them eventually a record deal, and then went on to produce a bunch of their records. Also, Ace Frehley's first album, and also engineered the live version of Derek and Domino's, which is an in-concert record that a lot of people don't know about, which is actually a pretty decent record. And this has all happened in the 60s and 70s. And then in the 80s, he produced people like John Williams, the classical guy, not the orchestra guy. And folks like Whitesnake and Graham Bonnet and Steve Vai and Fastway and Anthrax. And then by the 90s, he was co-authoring books and also has been an amateur photographer for a long part of his career. So as he moved in from records, which he still does, he did a lot of the production for the Woodstock 94 Festival and some stuff that Buddy Guy did back in the 90s. And Bootsy Collins and Brian May and all sorts of stuff. And then it started in the 2000s, started, showing off his artwork and photography at the San Francisco Art Exchange, in addition to continuing to produce tracks and records and engineer stuff. Now, was filmed and interviewed for the documentary on Sir George Martin, who is the longtime producer of most of the Beatles stuff, and did stuff with them, and just has a ridiculous career. I mean, he's done everybody and anybody. So some of the production credits include with Carly Simon and Jimi Hendrix and several Kiss records and Angel and Brownsville Station, who are the guys who originally did Smokin' in the Boys' Room that was redone by Motley Crue and made famous. But produced Peter Frampton's The Art of Control, Michael Stanley's record, Foghat's Stone Blue record, Triumph's record Thunder 7, Whitesnake's single Guilty of Love, Hurricane Eyes by Loudness, which is a Japanese heavy metal band. And I did Robin Trower's In the Line of Fire. He did Scream's record, Led to Scream, which is a great record. If people don't know about the Scream, that's John Corabi's first band. Really, really great record. If folks haven't heard it, they need to go back and listen to that. Based on John McLaughlin's record, who's the guy that started out with Mahavishnu. Brian May's Another World, which is a solo record. Buddy Guy's live record. A shoot ton of stuff. And then he's engineered Traffic's Mr. Fantasy record, three or four Hendrix albums, several of the Zeppelin records, John Mayall record, Empty Rooms, Blue Cheers, Outside Inside, Family, which had Rick Gretsch on violin and bass, which is the violin bass player of Blind Faith when Clapton left Cream and joined Steve Winwood, formerly of Traffic, and then Ginger Baker to form that one record album, Blind Faith. He's done the Nices record, Five Bridges, Larry Coryell, Curtis Mayfield, John Sebastian's record. So, I mean, he just has a ridiculous pedigree, and he's still around doing stuff today. And just a really, if you've ever seen any interviews with him or any bios, pics, or any documentaries he's done several with when they've documented some of the Hendrix stuff. I mean, he's just a really, really cool guy, got his stuff together, and definitely knows his way around the mixer board. And that's that's really an understatement. He's just a really prolific kind of folk, and just wanted to do a shout out to him, because a lot of times you'll see producers and arrangers not really getting the due that they receive, because really, if it weren't for folks like himself and Sir George Martin, a lot of these records that we all listen to and love would have come out much less well polished and much less well done without these folks. I mean, they really are the unsung heroes behind the scenes, so to speak. So I want to start doing some shout outs to some of those folks. And so this is my first attempt at that, by highlighting some of the stuff that Eddie Kramer is doing and is still doing today.
That is quite an impressive pedigree. All right.
Yes,
thank
it
you
is.
So much for that. All right. Looking forward to some more of the Unsung Heroes series that we're doing.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yes. All righty. We will take calls from our listeners. And in fact, we do have a listener on the line, Eric, that we will get to at some point this evening. He has some things he wants to share about tonight's topic. We'll take questions in the online chat room throughout the evening until around midnight. So feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. All right, tonight's topic, I'll Stand By You, with a nod to Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, Healthy Relationships After Toxic Ones. By request of one of our followers, tonight's topic is about how to find a healthy relationship after you've been in a toxic one. It sounds simple, and it can be, but it is not always easy. There are many reasons that people wind up in relationships that are unhealthy or toxic, and those reasons need to be addressed first before any kind of meaningful and long-term progress can be made. This topic is not necessarily about a mental illness issue, but it definitely can impact our mental health when things are not going well. Also, there can be additional issues in relationships that might be caused by or influenced by a mental health issue. Being in a healthy relationship is unfortunately not a skill that is built into our society, our culture, or our educational system is likely to be taught to most people before they reach their teens, when they begin forming a relationship history. Because of this, we will look at healthy relationships at a basic level tonight, and also how to adjust our choices and patterns to work towards having them. So tonight's discussion will be, first, what is a toxic relationship? Second, what is a healthy relationship? Third, how and why we end up in toxic relationships? And fourth, work to do before a new healthy relationship. And I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, real quick before we get started.
Yeah, I'm just going to briefly comment on this, because this is probably better saved on the how and why we end up in these kinds of obnoxious relationships. But well, what I would like to say initially is part of, you know, a large portion of this is because, as you mentioned in the intro, society nor our school system teaches us how to do this stuff. And I think that somehow folks think that we're going to learn this by watching reruns of Days of Our Lives or, you know, One Day at a Time or some of the soap opera, or reruns of Father Knows Best or, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, because A, life doesn't really operate like the way those soap operas and sitcoms do. And B, those are ideal situations that always get resolved. And as you know, being in toxic relationships or even finding a good one, it doesn't happen in 30 minutes. It's not resolved. And a lot of times can go on for years with the person never learning about this. So I really appreciate the fact that you recommended this as a topic for this evening. I think it's very, very timely.
Yes, and actually, I can't take all the credit for it. This was suggested and requested by one of our regular listeners who I'm in touch with on Facebook. So hopefully that
Oh, cool.
They're having an opportunity to listen to this. I don't know if they're listening now. It's a little late, but they'll be listening when it goes down to podcast later tonight. And I'm actually going to bring on our caller real quick and just check in with him. Eric, are you with us? You are live on the air, and I just wanted to see if there's anything you want to talk about before we get started on the big discussion.
Well, yes, I'm here. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciated your introduction to Eddie Kramer as well. I Googled him. That's fantastic. I'm a little nervous. I haven't been on air in a while. Basically, I thought that this show was meant for me. I've been going through kind of a toxic relationship scenario. I was involved with somebody for over 7 years. I'm obviously not a clinical psychologist, and I can't diagnose someone, but she does demonstrate all the like textbook signs of a narcissistic personality disorder. And while I have some, I've done a lot of research online about this, and I mean it's all there. In fact, she broke out a list the other day and was reading it off to me like I was guilty of these things and didn't see herself in any of the things she's done so many times, and just stuff like that. Like I was stuck at her place and she physically prevented me from leaving and wouldn't listen to a word I was saying. And I recorded a 2.5 hours of just trying to reason with her and being stuck there. And it was really grueling. And just today I feel all the, recognizing myself after doing some journaling and talking to my mom and some other people, just all the signs of like grief, the stages of grief in myself, and a lot of like sadness about it, because deep down I still care about this person, but I have to go no contact because if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and having tried everything enough times and just knowing that it always comes to this, like I just have to let it go. And it's sad because there's got to be some simple way. There's got to be a better way. And I could provide solutions, but if I'm not going to be respected and heard, that's just not going to happen. So that's where I've been.
I
don't
understand.
Know what else to say. Cause I don't want to monopolize anyone's time here because I want to hear you, but I wanted to chime in and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Sure. Well, we're going to get started. We'll talk about different aspects of the whole topic, and they'll be pausing places, and I'll check back in with you and see if there are things that you can relate to that maybe you want to share with some of our listeners so they can probably understand what it's like, from somebody who's freshly going through this right now. I definitely can relate.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and put you back on mute, and we'll go ahead and get started. Thanks so much.
All right, great. Thank you.
Alrighty, so having weighed in with Dr. Mathis and with our callers, let's go ahead and get started with the first section, which is, what is a toxic relationship? And I know that people have heard this all over social media, all over regular media, but I think they've heard it so much that they kind of don't really listen. So we're going to talk about it again. I hope you guys are paying attention. This will be on a podcast after the show's over. Please hang on to it. Download it. Take notes. Tell your friends, because this knowledge is in desperate need of being shared. Okay, let's first review how we would define a toxic relationship. It's important to understand what we're working to avoid and how to stop getting involved in such arrangements. So here's a list of some warning sign behaviors. By themselves, they may not be toxic to the level of having to end a relationship, this specific list, but they definitely signal problems that should not be left unaddressed long term. The fewer of these going on, the healthier the relationship will be. The source for this first list is hercampus.com. It is a page about domestic violence issues. And here are 10 signs of unhealthy behaviors in relationships. This is a milder list than some of the others we'll get to in a bit. Okay, first, lack of communication. Partners should be able to communicate both the good and the bad with each other. Without communication, there's no foundation to build a healthy relationship on. There might be a lack of communication if a couple is unable to talk about difficult topics. There are a lot of misunderstandings that never seem to get worked out, or they never seem to be on the same page. 2, dishonesty. This one may seem obvious, but dishonesty, especially continual and repeated dishonesty, is not a good foundation for any relationship. and yet it is very widespread. 3, disrespect. All relationships should have respect, especially intimate ones. Disrespect can include, but is not limited to, name-calling, breaking and disrespecting boundaries, and constantly questioning and criticizing the other person's choices and decisions. 4, dependence. While it's true that when in a relationship, a couple is a social unit, it's important to remember that each person in a relationship is an individual. Every person needs to have a certain level of independence. If one partner is constantly dependent on the other, whether financially, emotionally, or psychologically, this could indicate an unhealthy relationship. Forgive me, I have a little bit of a cough that I'm fighting off. And, you know, as far as being, you know, maybe financially dependent, I know some relationships have where one partner doesn't work, for example. It's not necessarily that those arrangements are unhealthy by themselves, but when you get into situations like that, it's hard to make your own way, and you get dependent on people so that if something goes wrong, it's very difficult to leave them. If you have to move out, how are you going to pay for it? And who's going to help you? So if you get into those situations, bear those things in mind in the back of your head just in case. Hopefully you won't ever need to care, but don't wait to think about that when it's too late. Number 5, jealousy. Now, this is the opinion of the article, and then I have a comment right after this. Some jealousy in a relationship is okay, normal even. However, jealousy becomes unhealthy when it's constant or excessive and becomes about one partner possessing the other. On the reverse side, if one partner is constantly trying to make the other partner jealous, that can also be a sign of an unhealthy relationship. Now, this is my opinion here. I personally disagree with this section. To me, my layperson's opinion, and, you know, I'll check in with Dr. Mathis at the end of this section. A healthy relationship should have clearly established boundaries regarding attention from other people. I mean, you know, for example, you guys could be poly, you know, and that's valid these days. Or even priorities that interfere with time and attention, such as other family members, too much work, excessive time put into your hobbies, and stuff like that. In a healthy relationship, you should feel confident and be correct, you know, not be fooled, that your partner knows and honors your boundaries and you guys agree on them, and you need not worry or constantly check up on them. If you do have even some jealousy, there's a problem between you. I mean, honestly, jealousy is a sign that you're insecure about where you stand. You know, in the relationship that I had up until recently, I was absolutely certain that my partner could be in a locked room across the country and I would not have to wonder what they were up to. I got with somebody that I didn't have to worry about, and that's a very strange feeling when you actually finally achieve that level of trust with somebody. But that should be the gold standard that we're striving for. Normalizing jealousy, I think, is a little toxic in our culture. I don't think you should be trying to make each other jealous. I don't think you should be worried about it so much. You know, if you are worried, there's a problem going on. So I disagree with the article in that respect. And I'm going to check in and see what Dr. Mathis has to say at the end of this. Number 6, manipulation. Manipulation can take many forms, but some examples could include mind games, convincing a partner to ignore their own wants and desires, and using guilt to get your own way. Number 7, criticism. Now, constructive criticism is one thing, but being overly and unnecessarily critical of a partner can be bad news. If it seems like a partner uses criticism to tear the other partner down, this could be a form of emotional abuse. Number 8, isolation. This is usually a huge red flag. While couples should enjoy spending time with each other, they should also spend time with other people and have a life outside of their partner. Isolation is an often used tactic by abusers to make the victim or survivor dependent on them by cutting off their ties to support networks, thus increasing their power and control in the relationship.
It's
Number
also
nine.
A tactic used by quote-unquote cults.
Yes, yes, and with somewhat of the same motive that if you don't have simpatico friends or family to get in touch with, there's nobody to support you when you don't agree with the manipulating partner.
Absolutely.
Okay. Pardon me. Next one is constant fighting. While all relationships will have some conflict in them, if you and your partner are constantly fighting, this could be a bad sign. Generally, you should not have to feel combative when you're with your partner. In other words, this should not be modus operandi between the two of you. Number 10, controlling behavior. If a partner exhibits controlling behavior, such as trying to control where the other one goes, who the other person sees, or what they do with their time, this is a very bad sign. And of course, when we're saying all these things, this is assuming that the person that is being asked not to do stuff is not engaging in things like, you know, running off behind the office building and doing a bunch of drugs and not, you know, conducting their life or, you know, going out and doing really horrible things or crimes or whatever. This is assuming they're doing day-to-day, average, normal things, and the other person is trying to control them all. People should not be required to report their every action to the other person. Other examples of controlling behavior could include demanding social media passwords, checking text messages, and using intimidation or coercion to get their way. I do have one exception to that, and you guys know we've talked about this on the show, the social media passwords thing. If you are you and your partner are actually married or in a long-term relationship where you would be functionally married, as in if something medical or, you know, emergency happens to your partner, you need those passwords for that kind of a reason, but it should only be in that sort of a circumstance, like it's in a black book in a drawer in case I get hit by a car. That kind of thing is cool. Otherwise, no, it's weird. Okay, I'm going to stop at the end of this quick section before we go to the rest of them and check in. Dr. Mathis, is there any other behaviors that you want to comment on before I go to the next one?
Yeah, what I would say is any of these emotional, what I'm going to call emotional abuse type tactics are definitely no-nos. You know, and in terms of your jealousy comment, I would agree with that. I think that anytime somebody gets in a situation where they have to feel envious or jealous of somebody's time or something's going on, you know, that's a red flag. And any of these red flags need to be talked about as they occur. You don't wait till 4, 5, or 6, or 13 of these happen before you go, oh, gee, there might be a problem here. I generally advise folks in any kind of dynamic relationship, friendship or otherwise, close friendship or otherwise, to talk about stuff as it happens and get clear the air as things go so that you don't have to hold on to these things like a hear-you list, and you don't have to ruminate about them and think about them and worry about them and you know, obsess about them, because you get rid of them as things come up, and that's kind of a healthy way to manage disagreements and upset situations and that sort of thing. And, you know, if you do that along and along, generally you can make things a lot smoother and less tumultuous. But when you see somebody doing this kind of stuff over and over and over, it's usually a sign for you to, you know, have a change of pace, so to speak. And, you know, I tell people, if you have discussions with folks and things just seem to keep repeating, you know, after about the third or fourth time, that's your cue to exit stage left. Because, you know, you're not going to change somebody that's doing this kind of stuff on a regular basis. And their behavior is not about you. It's about their BS and the stuff that they're not dealing with. And it's about their mental health issues that they need to take care of. And they don't need to take care of it by beating the crap out of you or manipulating the heck out of you. That's not an okay thing to do.
Yes, fair enough. Okay, so the next list that I have is much more focused on behaviors that are definitely in just about every context a no-no. So there's no gray area on this list. The source is youth.gov, and it's a section on teen dating, also speaking to potential and future domestic violence situations. So they say unhealthy relationships are marked by characteristics such as disrespect and control. It's important for youth, no, it's important for everybody, but this is what they say, to be able to recognize signs of unhealthy relationships before they escalate, as Dr. Mathis just points out. A lot of people dismiss it in the beginning because it seems to be milder, so they don't really take it seriously until they're knee deep. Okay, so some characteristics of unhealthy relationships include, and again, this list is not the maybe sometimes list. This list is the, if this is going on, it's always bad and you need to address it immediately. Number one, control. One dating partner makes all the decisions and tells the other what to do, what to wear, or who to spend time with. He or she or they are unreasonably jealous and or tries to isolate the other partner from their friends or family. Number two, dependence. One dating partner feels that they cannot live without the other one. They may threaten to do something drastic if the relationship ends. By the way, this is starting to get very dangerously close to BPD behavior. Dishonesty. One dating partner lies to or keeps information from the other. One dating partner steals from the other. Or, you know, hides things from the other, all kinds of things like that. And by the way, sins of omission count as dishonesty. You know, what you don't say is still a lie. Next is disrespect. One dating partner makes fun of the options and interests of the other partner or destroys something that belongs to the partner. Next is hostility. One partner picks a fight with or antagonizes the other partner. This could lead to one partner changing their behavior in order to avoid upsetting the other one, the whole walking on eggshells thing. Next is intimidation. One partner tries to control aspects of the other's life by making the other partner fearful or timid. One partner may attempt to keep their partner from friends and family or threaten violence or a breakup. Next is physical violence. One partner uses force to get their way, such as hitting, slapping, grabbing, or shoving. Next is sexual violence. One partner pressures or forces the other into sexual activity against their will or without their consent. And tricking somebody into it, you know, like roofies or wait until they're drunk or other stuff, still counts. And this is not from the article. This is just continuing on. Two of the most common themes relating to self-esteem and self-worth that keep people from choosing or trying to have healthy relationships are, first, that there is something undesirable or unworthy about them, and that anyone capable of being a healthy partner wouldn't want them, so they will have to take whatever they can get. Or the other one, that if they stick to higher standards and wait for a healthy partner, they will never find one and likely end up alone and lonely. Factors that can exacerbate these attitudes include believed undesirable demographics such as age, income, parental status, you know, whether you have kids, geography, mental health issues, and many others. Extensive personal investment or a long history with a partner that has turned out to be toxic, and or a track record of previous toxic or failed relationships. And at this point, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and then we'll go to our caller and see if there's anything he'd like to add after.
Yeah, one thing I always tell people is that if there's physical violence in the relationship, you should always think of using what I call the exorcist coping tool. Grab out! And get out now.
I thought you were suggesting vomiting on the violent partner.
Yeah. Minus the peas and ham, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime there's physical violence, that is a no-go. And generally speaking, if it happens once, irrespective of what the person says, it's going to happen again and again and again. And generally, anytime physical violence is happening in a relationship, you need to get the heck out then and there. You're done. It's over. Walk the heck out. Save yourself a lot of hassle because it's just going to repeat itself. And I don't care if kids are involved or not. Take the kids with you. If you're on the receiving end of that, take the kids with you. And if you can't, hire an attorney and make sure that the person that has the kids doesn't have them, because they're going to do this crap to the kids too. This is very, very common. I see this over and over and over in the literature. I see this over and over in cases I've worked on and in forensic situations. It's, a lot of these things that you mentioned are very typical of cluster B personality disorders, particularly borderlines.
Yeah. I mean, when I first heard about BPD, I defined it for a while as it's the quintessential wife beater personality.
Mm-hmm. Spouse beater, wife beater, whatever. Yeah.
I love you. I can't live without you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because as you know, BPD is predominantly a female disorder, although I have seen male borderlines, and they're just as ugly as the females. It doesn't get any better when it changes gender, let me tell you.
All right, so I'm going to go to our caller, and Eric, you are live on the air. I wanted to see if you had anything that you wanted to add about toxic relationships before we go to the next section.
Well, this part is very difficult for me to address because I have to cop to the many mistakes that I've made in the course of my relationships. And I guess what I want to say is that throughout, it's kind of hard to even put into words, but almost all of these things occurred in some measure, you know. Sometimes it was my fault, and sometimes it was her fault, and it just wound up being me against her, and her against me, and just not coming together or being resolved amicably. And there was never really any third party support, and I had hoped to have some social support and some kind of a third party, be it a therapist or some trusted friend, a person who is reliable and all that, to be with us. But almost all these things occurred in some measure, and to define as a toxic relationship. It's hard to just pick one thing. We got into fights. We got into arguments. There was jealousy. There was a lot of misunderstandings. There was, you know, name callings, disrespect, all this stuff. And it, you know, I don't know how much of it, if any, was premeditated or any of that, but it just kept happening. I think it's part of what makes it so difficult, or has made it so difficult, to really reach a conclusive understanding or resolution about it. Like, you know, there's so much like guilt tripping of blame and recrimination that goes on back and forth, of fault finding and all of that. And it's, you know, hard to just focus on positive things and let it ride, because there was always something wrong. And I feel like I did do my absolute best to learn and improve and repair and, you know, contribute and all that. And I just kept coming up short and just having the same kinds of problems over and over, no matter what I did. So I don't want to sit here and tell you that I was perfect or that I was really terrible, but I do have some guilt associated with this, as well as just a, you know, sadness and pain of loss. As much as I am able to kind of parse it and, you know, look at the things that were difficult to impossible for me, in terms of dealing with her, getting, you know, a good result in dealing with her, you know what I mean? Without going into the sort of details, it's a lot.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think that maybe your guilt on it is part of what is making it hard to walk away from it? You sort of feel like it, because it's not all her, that maybe you don't want to give up, because some of it was you. Is that an issue for you, Eric?
Definitely, because I knew there were things that where I could, you know, where I felt bad and guilty, or where I could improve or learn something, you know, and do better. And I always felt like a certain amount of, you know, compassion for her, and sorry about things too. But she also used that. I feel like she used that to manipulate me. Like, she just kept bringing stuff up over and over, and no matter what I said, it didn't seem to make it better. And no matter how constructive I tried to be with my feedback and all that, and what positive things I tried to propose and recommend, like whether it was her health issues or something else maybe she didn't feel like she had control of or didn't want to enter into to change, it didn't really get better at all. And so the same things kept happening over and over. So I was definitely not totally at fault, but she definitely made it out to be like it was all my fault, you know? And
yeah,
it's hard, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm
Dr. Mathis, go ahead.
So I'm curious as to what prevented you guys from going in for couples counseling.
Well, I guess she lives over an hour away, and money was an issue, and our schedules are different. Well, she didn't work, but I worked. And I brought it up. I mean, we both saw therapists at different times. I saw a number of them, and she had one in the last year or two. But for whatever reason, it seemed to me like she was unwilling to do it. I wanted to do it.
When yeah, I felt and like that's I was also a sign. If you're in a situation and your partner's and you're having clear difficulties repeatedly and your partner's not willing to seek professional help when it's not resolvable between the two of you or with friends, that's another clear sign that you need to get the heck out, because that means this is a person who doesn't really want to change, and their solution to change is having everybody acquiesce to their BS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have done anything in my power to have a healthy relationship with her, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, I was just curious. I wasn't indicting anybody. I was just curious as to why you guys didn't do that.
Well,
but
yeah. I have been kind of defensive, because when I've told people about it, they tend to, like, weigh in by taking sides, either in defense of me and trying to protect me, or maybe people she told that she put a completely different spin on it. You know, like, our versions are not
right.
going to match up. That's partly why
right.
the argument was...
Sure.
Well, and that's part of the reason why you seek a trained professional to intercede here, because one of the things I do when I work with couples is both couples take a personality test when they walk in the door. And everybody who sees me takes a personality test when they walk in the door, so I know what I'm dealing with. So I don't care what stories I'm getting. The test tells me everything I need to know, and the thing has ridiculous amounts of validity and reliability on it. So you're not going to argue your way out of the test. So the person is, oh, no, mm-hmm. I don't do this. And the test shows up going, you know. It's pretty flipping obvious what's going on, you know. And then, of course, I confront the person, and they either get pissed off or walk out, or they collapse and, you know, play the pity party. And I'm like, no, look. And I'm not here to castigate anybody. I'm here to point out what's going wrong, and then I'm going to give you solutions and give you guys homework to do to get around the solutions. I'm not here to be a bad guy. I'm not here to point fingers at people. I'm not here to castigate people. I'm not playing critical parent. But don't bullshit me. Yeah, if you come in and start lying, I'm going to call you on it, and the test is going to call you on it. And you're not going to hard argue the test, because this is like the one of the few personality tests that's admissible in the United States Supreme Court, for God's sake. So, you know... You're not getting around that shit. and this is part of the reason I do it, because people do come in and they lie. They minimize or they put their own spin on it, sometimes unconsciously, because they've been defending for so long they don't even know they're defending.
Yeah.
So, all right. I'm going to go ahead and pause you on this, Eric, and let's go to the next section, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right. Okay, so the next part that we want to talk about is what is a healthy relationship, and we got about 10 minutes left on the show, so we'll see if we need to make this a two-parter, but I definitely want to get this started so that we are clear where we are heading and where our goals should be. So here are a few examples describing healthy relationships that our listeners can use as a guideline or personal goals for their own situations. This first part is from ny.gov. It's a public health site on teen dating. Again, you know, I'm not focusing on teens, but a lot of teens end up in these relationships early on because, as we mentioned earlier, they're not taught when their dating relationship era starts how to be in a healthy relationship. So a lot of times they're immature, they're inexperienced, someone older gets a hold of them, and here you go. So a lot of these teen public health sites have sections on this stuff. So this is what they say. Healthy relationships involve honesty, trust, respect, and open communication between partners, and they take effort and compromise from both people. There is no imbalance of power. Partners respect each other's independence, can make their own decisions without fear of retribution or retaliation, and share decisions. If or when a relationship ends, there's no stalking or refusal to let the other partner go. Characteristics of healthy relationships. Respect for privacy and space. You don't have to be with your partner 24/7. Your partner encourages you to spend time with friends without them and to participate in activities that you enjoy that they might not. Excuse me. You feel comfortable expressing your opinions and concerns to your partner. You feel physically safe, and your partner doesn't force you to have sex or to do things that make you feel uncomfortable. And, you know, this could be going to activities or wearing certain things or hanging out with certain people that don't make you feel safe. Your partner respects your wishes and feelings, and you can compromise and negotiate when there are disagreements or conflicts. I'm really done with this cough. I apologize to you guys for that. Okay, the foundation of a healthy relationship includes boundaries. You and your partner are able to find ways to meet each other's needs in ways that you both feel comfortable with. Communication. You and your partner can share your feelings, even when you don't agree, in a way that makes the other person feel safe, heard, and not judged. Trust. Building trust can take time and allow couples to be vulnerable with one another, knowing that they can rely on the other person. And consent. Most commonly used when you're being sexually active, giving consent means that you're okay with what's happening and that no one is forcing you or guilting you into doing anything you don't want to do. Consent can be given and taken back at any time, and giving consent once does not mean you automatically give consent in the future. This is another list. This is from youth.gov. Healthy relationships share certain characteristics that teens should be taught to expect, anybody should be taught. They include, and these are things that a healthy relationship should have, anger control. We all get angry, but how we express it can affect our relationships with others. Anger can be handled in healthy ways, such as taking a deep breath, counting to 10, or talking it out. You can also, you know, pause and come back to it if you can't civilly talk about it. Being a role model. By embodying what respect means, partners can inspire each other, friends, and family to also behave in a similar respectful way. Compromise. In a dating relationship, each partner does not always get his or her own way. Each should acknowledge different points of view and be willing to give and take. Fighting fair. Everyone argues at some point, but those who are fair, stick to the subject, and avoid insults are much more likely to come up with a possible solution. Partners should take a short break away from each other if the discussion gets too heated. Good communication. Each partner should speak honestly and openly to avoid miscommunication. If one person needs to sort out his or her feelings first, the other partner should respect those wishes and wait until he or she is ready to talk. Healthy sexual relationship. Dating partners engage in a sexual relationship that both are comfortable with, and, you know, and that could mean no sexual relationship, you know, to speak of. You know, abstinence is a valid choice. And neither partner feels pressured or forced to engage in sexual activity that is outside their comfort zone or without their consent. Honesty. Honesty builds trust and strengthens the relationship. individuality. Neither partner should have to compromise who they are, and their identity should not be based on their partner's. Each should continue seeing their friends and doing the things they love. Each should be supportive of their partner wanting to pursue new hobbies or make new friends. I do want to make one small caveat here. I think that friends that don't get along, actively don't get along with your partner, can be not a red flag, maybe a pale red flag. Just when there's a little bit of contention going on, it can be a problem in the relationship if there's active animosity between a long-term partner and a good friend. So that's something that needs to get worked out and not left to fester and not ignored. Okay, mutual respect. Respect means that each person values who the other is and understands the other person's boundaries. Problem solving. Dating partners can learn to solve problems and identify new solutions by breaking a problem into small parts or talking through the solution or situation, excuse me. Self-confidence. When dating partners have confidence in themselves, it can help their relationships with others. It shows that they are calm and comfortable enough to allow others to express their opinions without forcing their own opinions on others. Trust. Partners should place trust in each other and give each other the benefit of the doubt. Understanding. Each partner should take time to understand what the other might be feeling. And here I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis. You're getting close to the top of the hour. So I'm going to check in with you and then with our caller, and we may pause this and make it a two-part show. So let's check in with you here.
I was going to suggest that. And okay. The other thing is it would be really cool if Eric wanted to come in for the follow-up show as well. I think it'd be great to have his commentary on some of the stuff.
Yep, and I will check in with him in a minute. Is there anything you want to talk about healthy relationships before we bring him in?
I think this is pretty good. I would say, the key to this is respecting each other's boundaries, individuality, communicating. That is the number one problem in all relationships, regardless of age or gender or sexual preference or socioeconomic status. It is over and above the prima facie problem that all couples, dyads, polys talk about as the major problem. Everybody thinks it's money or sex, and those are down the road, but the communication skills are like number one. Communication conflict management skills are like number one on everybody's list and have been for years. And again, that's because we don't teach people how to do that.
Exactly. All right, Eric, I'm going to bring you back on live. Is there anything that you want to talk about with regard to healthy relationships? And then we'll go ahead and wrap the show, and you are welcome to join us in 2 weeks for the part two that we're not going to get to tonight.
Well, this has been great. This hour has gone so fast. It's a lot to take in, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity. I can't thank you all enough. That said, yes, I'll be happy to come back. I'm taking notes here, so I really love the description of a healthy relationship, and it's good to have that definition handy because people do need some sort of a rubric. They need to know what their goals are. And I do believe in all this stuff, and I have done my best. And I guess it's just unfortunate and a little hard to describe how things get, twisted or blown out of proportion or fall down or whatever, even when that's not your intention. I feel like I went in unprepared and was blindsided and just got caught up in stuff and just wound up just scrambling, trying to find some purchase in the midst of this. And it just went on and on and on. Well, this is good stuff. I'm really, really glad to be here, and I appreciate this. This is exactly what I needed right now. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad it was helpful, and thank you for being willing to put yourself out there. And we're hoping that, there are other listeners out there going through similar situations, and they can kind of watch you going through the process, and maybe it will help them to be able to do so as well. So I'm going to go ahead and put you back on hold, and thanks for your comments. And let's go ahead and check back in. Dr. Mathis, is there anything that you want to say on this topic in general before we pause and wrap up for the evening?
No, I think we're good. And I wanted to say thanks for coming on, Eric. And, you know, thanks for being willing to come back next time and to be forthcoming about what's going on. I mean, we all make mistakes. I mean, we all get involved in stuff, even those of us who've had training and should know better. we still foobar every now and then because we're not, you know, we're not machines and we're not God. We make mistakes. And a lot of times these things start out really slowly. You know, usually most toxic relationships don't start out full blown with somebody going up and on the first date going, "Hey, you're really cute," and then raping them, or going, yeah, "What do you mean you don't want to see Star Wars?" and beating the shit out of them and throwing them in the car and taking them to the movie theater with a black eye. I mean, you know, this stuff generally it kind of grows on you like cancer, and it's not like all or none. It's a gradual thing. And you know, people who are unaware of what's going on, which is a large number of folks, it just kind of creeps up on them. And before you know it, you're like, "How the hell did I get here?" So, you know, there's nothing to feel embarrassed or ashamed or whatever. I mean, everybody's done it at one point or another. Everybody screws up in one way or another. So it just means we're all human trying to get better. And that's kind of why we do this show, is to help people get better and be awesome, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me tell you, for what it is worth, all you guys, I have done so many things on all of these lists. You know, I have done I've been in the toxic situations and had a hard time getting out. And I finally did get out. And I've had a chance to see the healthy relationship stuff too. And it's really awesome. And when we come back in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about that part. So in summary, for now, we hope our listeners can better understand what it's going to take to create a healthy relationship after having left the toxic one. So we're going to talk about that in detail next time. So this is an undertaking that involves a lot of risk, skills that people may not have been taught, you know, intuition, a little luck, a leap of faith, but many people will find the end result to be worthwhile. And you know, just to be sure that it's clear, if you get out of a toxic relationship and you're kind of just feeling like being by yourself, also valid. But we just want to make sure that if you do get involved with somebody next time, that it won't be a repeat of the toxic things. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion, and it'll be the second half of this on Wednesday, September 30th. 11 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. We also want to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. Travel Itch Radio normally is scheduled on Thursday right after us. They had a show scheduled this evening, and I don't know if it was a boo-boo or not. So they might be on tomorrow night at 8, but if I'm wrong, then they were on this evening, so that's before me, and I can't help it. Sorry. Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday morning extravaganza, Saturday in the 19th, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday morning quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. No one is safe while they troll the digital airwaves, so join them as they discuss the latest news in the world of sports and review the events of the past week. The Walking Dead Online Viewing Party, my other show, Season 10, Episode 16, A Certain Doom, will air on October 4th at 9 p.m., There will be 6 more episodes tacked on the end of Season 10 that will air in early 2021. The new third Walking Dead series, Worlds Beyond, will premiere Season 1, Episode 1, Brave, on October 4th at 10 p.m., following the pseudo-finale. Fear the Walking Dead, Season 6, Episode 1, The End is the Beginning, will air the following weekend. So what's going to happen is we're going to start up the pattern of Sunday nights, and it'll divide up, but the finale will happen the 4th, and then we'll have the dividing up between Fear and World Beyond instead of Fear and Walking Dead Classic. So that'll air the following weekend, the 11th at 9 p.m., and run 8 episodes until the 29th, Thanksgiving weekend, and then we'll have a break. And I'll have more details for you guys on that as we get closer. Jedi Tax Radio, Sunday the 4th, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, following The Walking Dead. a new show airing monthly on First Sundays with Rogelio de Noriega, CRTP. You can also see him at Jedi.tax and on Twitter at the IRS Man. Monday Night in America with Roger Noriega, 9:21, 10 p.m. Roger Noriega brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. Fandom Access Week in Review, Tuesday the 22nd. Join the chatty critics Jamie, Karen, and AJ as they digest another night of TV. Please look for us at The Rock and Roll Shrink on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Thank you especially to Eric for joining us. And hopefully we'll see you in 2 weeks. Hopefully all of you will come by in 2 weeks. Good night, take care, and rock on.